I don't think Walt Disney's going to be very happy with you using that.
I think I played too much before we get sued. hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play podcast.
They're a really big company, you know.
Yeah, they're only worth, you know, a few trillion dollars. This might be the first NBA and last NBA bubble podcast that we're going to be able to do, but...
They're gonna fire Twitter trolls and people. They're gonna find us. Before we've even posted this, we're recording it now. They're gonna find us straight up.
We're recording this probably right into the thick of the start, at least at the start of the playoffs, the first round playoffs. There's a few games that have happened, but we're recording it just sort of going over the 8 game sort of bubble games and how we thought the teams went, a couple of stats and scores and. Yeah, then probably our first NBA bubble team.
Yeah, I guess, whether we do it in the traditional sense of, two guards and three forwards. But, yeah, we discussed this a little bit a little bit earlier, whether or not this isn't really your traditional type thing. I still like to do things traditionally like that. We'll get to that a bit later.
So we'll start with the first, week. I mean, the first couple of games were the hyped games, so to speak, and the Utah Jazz up against New Orleans Pelicans and then the two LA teams.
Yeah, on that first day, as you go through it, they were two super exciting games. I think the NBA, when you do scheduling and stuff like that, it could be, it's still a bit of a crapshoot whether or not you're actually going to get exciting games. Either one of these, I wouldn't have thought that the Lakers Clippers would have been a blowout, but the Jazz Pelicans should have, could have gone either way. The Pels, pretty much gagged away a 16 point lead, going into the fourth quarter. What was it? 106, 104. In the clutch, sort of coming down the stretch there, I think New Orleans sort of, were found wanting a little bit. Obviously, they're one of their big things all year has been turnovers. And when you play a high paced game like they do, the old 8 seconds or less offense, that you're going to have turnovers. That's just a natural byproduct of what that offense is going to be. They just couldn't quite come away with it in the clutch, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. And I don't know, reading into that, this is all sort of hearsay and then looking forward, I guess. But reading into that, what did you sort of think of the New Orleans Pelicans and the way they played?
They were ordinary at best. Even that first sort of where they played three games at the start there. They were pretty ordinary. I think they were 1-2 to end the week. Zion sort of looked a little out of sync, I guess, a little bit. He'd spent time away for a family emergency. He'd come back probably not in the greatest of shape. So that didn't really help. That didn't really help him either. So,
I mean, the reason
a lot of people criticized him as well. And that's the thing, that this was set up. All of this was set up because of Zion Williams.
You're right. I mean, and that's what I'm probably asking because. Really, except if it wasn't Zion, I really don't think they should have been there.
None of those teams at the bottom there. And at the end of our NRL podcast the other day, you're welcome, Portland. You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they shouldn't because have. They shouldn't have been
those
there.
Those teams, they just shouldn't have been anywhere near. I get it. Portland's had injuries. Sacramento's had injuries. New Orleans had injuries at the start of the season, obviously with Zion not there and going through a 14-game losing streak during the start of the season. This far into the season, even before the restart, your record pretty much shows you who you are.
Yeah.
It just does. And New Orleans were a bad team. There's nothing wrong with that. It is what it is.
Yeah.
They were a bad team, and they shouldn't have been anywhere near yeah, this playoff restart.
No, you're right. They shouldn't have been. And for the fact of I'm assuming they got pressured into it purely because of Zion, but
oh, of course they did.
He should have, like, he was just sort of, I guess, coming off or shaking off sort of an injury anyway. So, like, I think I think you alluded to early, very early on, they should have just wrapped him in cotton wool and just said, well, this is your year over and let's build towards next year again.
No, well, that's right. You know, them getting in, you know, the 19 games that he played at the end of the season, and I don't want to talk too much about the Pels because they were a very underwhelming team, but yeah, just paying as much attention to them as what I do. It's just giving him the 19 games, that was cool. Give him that experience. New Orleans were only 10-9 with him in those games, so that they're barely above 500. So chemistry was probably a little bit of an issue to start with. At his stature at the moment. Yeah, there's people out there that are saying, you know, obviously Charles Barkley's one of them. I think C Webb even might have been coming out and saying that he's got to drop a few kegs. And in that style, and everything could change. You know, Elvin Gentry's been fired, so that system now could totally change. So whether or not they're gonna have to make a move, I think quickly to get a coach in there to establish a style of play that is going to result in wins. And it has to be revolved around two players, Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram.
Interestingly, you say that. I was trying to sort of cast in mind who they would really go after. Like, if you're going after a win now coach, is pretty much what you're saying.
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Going after a win, you know, a win now sort of mentality. Look, there's plenty of not so much rookie coaches out there, but there's talk of Jason Kidd. There's talk of Becky Hammond. They're the ones that sort of, to me, a few years ago, they should have absolutely never have gotten rid of Monty Williams, because look at what he's doing at Phoenix right now. So, yeah, and that year, New Orleans actually made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Okay, they got unceremoniously dumped by the eventual champions in the Golden State Warriors in a sweep in the first round, and then Monty Williams gets fired. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
No, so, you're right.
But you stay the course. You know, they get lucky last year. They get the number one pick. You get Zion Williamson. So who's to say, you know, any of that even happens if Monty Williams stays on? Do you know what I mean? Like, you can go into the hypotheticals of everything.
Oh man, like, who knows? They could have been playing good and AD could still be there for all we know.
Well, that exactly right.
Hypotheticals, exactly. But you're right. I mean, I think they do need to win now, coach, and they probably need. We'll probably talk about picks maybe later, but they probably need an established veteran in there, I think, as well. And I'm not saying just like a JJ Redick. I'm saying probably another above average sort of player, possibly.
Well, you know, JJ does a good job in spreading the floor for them as well. Like, he's been terrific for them. I've always been a fan of JJ Redick, and he was when I'd heard that they'd signed him, you know, on that deal. I was super excited that he was sort of coming there. He's one of those genuine three-point threats that you just simply can't leave alone, and he takes some difficult shots, you know, off screens, you know, on the rolls, stuff like that. Like, his some of his shot selection is extremely difficult, but he knocks them down.
Yeah, he does.
I think this year he's shooting at 44% from three.
Yeah, no, he does. You're right. He's like he would give Kyle Korver sort of as well, but Kyle Korver's more of a pure sort of straight up and down sort of shooter.
He doesn't come off curls a lot either. Like, they screen for him. But JJ Redick's athletic too. Like, he'd have a couple of years. He'd be a couple of years younger than what Kyle Korver is as well.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
It was super disappointing to sort of see his playoff streak end. Apparently he'd made the playoffs like 22 straight years of his career, going all the way back to high school. So. That was a little disappointing to see that they didn't make the playoffs. But they are who they were, and they just weren't a good team, and they showed it.
The other game on that day was the Battle of LA, depending on how you look at it or how you want to call it, with the Lakers.
Wasn't that a Rage Against the Machine album?
Yeah, definitely. Battle of Los Angeles, definitely. it definitely is. But the Lakers, I mean, read into it what you will, but the Lakers, you know, they did win that one 103-101. Reason I say read into it what you will, because I know we're going to talk about these eight games, and there's a lot of teams that will shine in these eight games, but there's a lot of teams that, you know, some wins really didn't need. I don't know, like, it wasn't. They needed to win, clearly, to, you know, clinch spots and all that, but it wasn't. Certain wins didn't feel like wins, if you know what I mean.
I didn't think a lot of teams were taking these eight games seriously.
The lower half
teams. You know, teams like New Orleans, like Sacramento, you know, like Phoenix, even though it seemed, you know, very unlikely that Phoenix was going to get in. You know, Memphis would have been taking it seriously. I think teams like Houston and OKC, that they would have been taking it seriously. You know, and so that's, I mean, some teams I don't think were taking it very seriously at all, and I think the Lakers are one of them. But not so much the taking it seriously, but just trying to tinker with lineups. Get guys that aren't probably going to be playing a lot through the playoffs, just getting them reps. They had a few extra new players sort of brought in recently, you know, not just for the restart, but before that, you know, guys like Deion Waiters, J.R. Smith. They didn't have, or they don't have, Avery Bradley, who's a, you know, a primary defender, and they could really, really use him to try and stop Damian Lillard at the moment in the first round of the playoffs. But yeah, they just needed to get guys like that acquainted and playing minutes with different possible lineups, so they can sort of revisit those once the playoffs come around if need be.
Yeah, and that and exactly what you said. That's how it happened. I mean, if you look at the minutes that were sort of spread in that game, you know, Deion Waiters end up getting 21 minutes for 11 points. And, you know, I haven't seen Deion Waiters play more than 10 minutes generally, because Deion Waiters will just do that, what Deion Waiters, everybody thinks Deion Waiters does, and gets, you know, streaky 11 points in 10 minutes or 2 minutes.
Well, no, that's right. Yeah, and so, that's what, you know, Deion Waiters is, as he's gotten a little bit older, he's become a lot more streakier when it comes to things like that. When he was a little bit younger and playing in Cleveland and places like that, he was a bit more consistent. Now he sort of looks like a little bit more of a streak kind of guy. But yeah, it's, I mean, you only need him for one game. You know, he needs to get hot for one game, and all wins in the playoffs. You know, you only need 16 of them for a championship. So, you know, all wins come at a premium.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All wins do come at a premium. But yeah, they tinker with their lineup. I mean, obviously you're too big. Anthony Davis got 34 points and 8 rebounds. LeBron, 16 points, 11 rebounds, only 7 assists, which is pretty low for him this year. But
yeah, league leader in assists this year. So,
and I think on the other side, the Clippers, they all played well, but I think it was, and I think Kawhi alluded to this during those eight games. You know, trying to have that chemistry with Paul George was key, is and was key for them. It has to be key.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so absolutely, that's key. Like the more that those two play together, and that they played in that restart, both of them played 6 games. So they still missed 2 games each. They've just had 3 months off. Like, I just don't know why they need to load manage those guys. Even if you just play them, you know, you treat it like a preseason game. You play them 12, 14 minutes, and then it's like, righto, have a seat, and we'll let our other guys do it. Like, just not having them play at all makes no sense to me.
Any other sort of – well, there were 6 games the day after on US, sort of Friday the 31st. Any standout games in there for you on that one?
Well, it was, I guess it was the start of the fall of the Memphis Grizzlies and the rise of the Trailblazers. That game went into OT. It was 140-135. Damian Lillard didn't have one of his big games. I think it was CJ McCollum had 33 points in that game. So they absolutely need him to fire for them to go anywhere. You know, obviously Yusuf Nurkic is helping, and Carmelo Anthony But they've got a very short rotation, much like what Houston does at the moment. Houston's only using an 8-man rotation. So having Russell Westbrook out at the moment is going to dent them a lot harder than what I think a lot of people would think. I think it's really going to make them – I think it's going to make them suffer a little bit.
Well, that's good. That was a ridiculous – you're right. That was the rise of Portland, sorry. But that – all those games Saturday were all over 100+, but that one, yes, it went to OT, was 153-149 Rockets over the Mavericks.
Rockets and Mavericks. That was just like, who wants to play defense? Not me.
I mean, but in saying
that's
that,
that's an all-star game type. Oh, okay, yes, like you said, you know, granted it went overtime, but
once, but still, I mean, if overtime once, usually around the 120, 125, maybe not 150s. Both teams getting nearly 150. Great. It looks like, I mean, again, I don't know what the Knicks were thinking, getting rid of KP, but Porzingis, 39 points, 16 rebounds.
Yeah.
I still fail to see what they – I mean, obviously, by the sounds of it, there was all this discontent on his end, apparently, but he's – Him and Luka, they
and that's the thing too. Don't discount what Luka's doing for him as well. Like,
no, that's right.
He's got help. He's got help there, and he can really shine as that two-man, that two-man punch with Luka Doncic, and hearing radio shows in the States saying that in the next, I think it was on Greeny, one of the new ESPN radio shows, Mike Greenberg is basically said the next 10 years it's Luka's league. He's going to be the best player in the league within 2 years.
I mean looking at it and everything he does, I'd agree. I'd honestly, so what do you are they classing him technically as a shooting guard? Or is he a forward?
I don't know
sort
what they
guard?
Class him as.
Because that's...
He runs the ball. He can be a guard. What is he, 6'8"? He can play forward.
Yeah.
You know, he's a good rebound. You know, for his size, 6'8", 6'9". He's a good rebounder because there's plenty of guys out there that are that, sort of height that aren't good rebounders at all.
Not that it matters.
He's
but
just got a knack. He's just got a knack for the game. Like that's his...
Yeah.
He makes the right choices. He makes the right passes. Yeah, that's the thing with him. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and he's really tuned in to what the game is. And this is his second year in the NBA, so now he's got a good feel for what the NBA is. And he's just going to go from strength to strength.
Yeah, he's only 21 years old, which is again, speaking of crazy, and this is all into Dallas's favor. I still can't even work out why. Atlanta didn't see. Was it Atlanta that? Missed. I mean,
they were going for the new league, and they knew that 3-pointers are a premium. But Dallas has pretty much got instant success with Luka Doncic. And okay, fair, like you said, fair enough. KP's there, but Atlanta very much didn't have a lot of success with the young guys that they had, obviously drafting Cam Reddish this year, John Collins, players like that are super young, and that's what happens when you've got a young team with literally zero veterans on that team. Apart from Vince Carter, who wasn't really going to help you that much.
And towards the end there, got traded from Detroit to there. He went to Cleveland. No, who got traded to Atlanta? It's probably not a veteran. I'm trying to. It was a center, but I can't remember. But it's definitely another. It's a veteran. Well, not a veteran, like not Vince Carter veteran. I can't even think about it now. But you're right.
I can't think about it.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's a very extremely young side. Very, very young side.
Yeah, no, exactly. Clint Capella. Not to necessarily say that he's a veteran. Like I don't see him being a locker room leader. Like,
no,
do you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
That's. But like you said, he has got a few years under the belt now. They ended up acquiring Clint Capella. They also got Dwayne Dedmon as well.
From
Sacramento. So that's a bit of a funny one. So, because they had Jabari Parker there at the start of the year, and then Jabari Parker ended up going in with that trade over to Sacramento. I still have high hopes for Jabari Parker, for him to be, you know, what he was those first couple of years in Milwaukee before he sort of, you know, got engulfed by Giannis. Everybody craps on him for his defense, but that's, I mean, nobody plays defense anymore. Just have a look at this bubble. Damn it, I said bubble.
Oh man,
nobody plays defense anymore. Like, come on, give me a break.
There was going through, you know, the next weeks anyway as well. There was hardly anybody, and I mean hardly any team scored under 100, which is absolutely insane, really. When you actually
and it's fresh players as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, everybody's just had 3 months off. These guys are professionals. Okay, yeah, almost all of the time, 90% of the time, good offense is going to outshine good defense. It just is.
Yeah.
Just because of the pure athleticism. You know, your offensive player is always going to have the advantage. So, yeah, you've got to have some serious, you know, defensive prowess to stop great offense all of the time. It just simply can't be done. You just have to limit it.
The next week was there was a host of games. I mean, I can add them up now. There was six 36-41 games the next week.
Yeah, it was totally stacked.
41 games, but I mean, it was the rise of the way they were playing, the Phoenix Suns.
Well, I thought if you go week by week, I guess, you know, they sort of finished off. They finished off the first week at 3-0.
Yeah.
And it just looked like they just weren't giving, you know, a crap about what people were saying about them. They were going out there and just letting it all hang out on the court. And whether or not, yeah, it sort of caught other teams off guard, they just didn't care. They're just like, righto, we're just going to go at it. If we win, we win. If we don't, okay, fair enough. Then, you know, we've got some building blocks for next year.
Yeah, and obviously to me the standout was when they beat, well, to everybody I suppose, when they beat the Clippers by 2, the 117-115. So
that was the buzzer. Was that the Booker buzzer beater where he hit the floor?
That was the Booker buzzer beater. Yeah, and there was no, like, you know, LA had a strong squad. You know, Kawhi was there.
No, that's right. Paul absolutely. That's what makes it impressive. It wasn't as if that was one of the games where, you know, either PG sat out or Kawhi sat out. Both guys were there. It was essentially a full strength squad.
Yeah. You're right. That was the buzzer beater by Devin Booker. But Devin Booker, you know, he was on every game we'll probably talk about. He just seemed to be everywhere. He got 35 points in that game and 8 assists.
Well, we all know. Everybody knows. Anybody who watches the NBA and anybody knows this, like, you know, Devin Booker is, he is a special player, and it's unfortunate
that
he's been
Phoenix
and they've been underachieving.
In saying that, then you're right, but is that why we don't talk about him that much? Not us, I'm his name in general. I know people, and I'm not saying that people don't talk about him that much. Is that because he's lost in Phoenix, do you think? Not lost as a player, but lost in, like,
I get where you're coming from. Phoenix isn't really that much of a small town, do you know what I mean? Like, even though it would probably be classed as a small market, they've been successful before.
Yeah, they have. We go so the days and
yeah, that's right. You know, in the mid '90s, you know, in the D'Antoni days of Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire and like, Sean Marion and those guys, like, they've been, you know, they've been successful. And okay, yes, recently they've been. Man, they've been terrible, and that's why they've gotten players, you know, like Devin Booker, and you know, they've got DeAndre Ayton now, and they're trying to make that move out of purgatory in that bottom half of the Western Conference. And the West is tough, and that's the other thing as well. You know, in the last 6, 7, 8 years, the West has been rough.
Yeah, no, it has.
So, yeah, you could still have a decent squad, and if you want to compare records. across the conferences. You put those records in the Eastern Conference, and they're borderline playoff team.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's fair. Clearly, that's fair.
But at least a lot of teams get lost in the West, yeah. Especially recently. A lot of people will talk about both LA teams, especially now. Golden State Warriors. There's been a rise at Denver, Houston. Yeah. Even Dallas.
Dallas, they
haven't been great.
Yeah.
Recently, the last couple of years they have been good.
Yeah.
Because they're your big markets. Mm-hmm. So your small market teams, it doesn't matter what sort of star power they have, they'll generally get lost.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Definitely.
Unless they are an absolute bona fide superstar, like, a Zion Williamson, like a Giannis Antetokounmpo, that then those small market teams will have, the lights shine on them a little bit more, and have, 647 games on national TV over the next 2 years. So,
that's true.
You're not going to see that from a team like the Sacramento Kings or Chicago Bulls or somebody like that, in the near future.
Is it, do you see then, like, see, Booker to me is, you're right. And I don't see him on that team in the next 2, 3, 4 years. If the Warriors were smart enough, that'd be a trade piece. If we're talking sort of down the track, that'd be a person I'd go after. I don't think it'd work there, but
it can't work there, can it? How do you play a three guard rotation?
I don't know.
With Klay Thompson, like you got to try and make it happen. But I think their future is a little more brighter, at the moment. Yeah, especially with the draft position that they're in at the moment. The draft was recently, and they ended up, which kind of sucks. They had the worst record in the league, and they ended up with a number 2 pick. But in saying that, this year it's not a super deep draft class, so number 1, number 2 doesn't really matter. So they'll be having their phone ringing off the hook for trade. For trade partners. Absolutely, they will be.
Yeah, they won't be keeping that. I just saying, I think Devin Booker, I know he signed an extension there, but I don't see him staying there in the next 2, 3, 4 years at all.
If they're not winning, then he might be balling and putting up points. But by the end of this, they ended up being 34-39, so essentially five games under 500, but. Once again, in the West, that's just not going to cut it.
No, it's not going to cut it. You're right. No, it
you need to be five games above 500.
You've got to be exactly right. You have to be above 500.
Yeah, you've got to shoot. You've got to shoot for that. This year, obviously Portland gets in with 35 wins. Once again, you're welcome. But Dallas Mavericks had 42.
Not welcome to me. I don't like Portland anyway.
Yeah, well, I'll see how that series sort of pans out, I guess. Everybody's losing their mind over the first couple of games. But you know what I mean? There was four teams by the end of it that had 44 wins. And you wouldn't think, any sort of other year, there's still more games to be played. But it is what it is. That's the kind of record that you're going to have to aim for if you want to be even in that lower eight. From 5 to 8 seed in the West, you have to aim for that 45, 46 wins.
Mm-hmm. No, I think so.
And that's a drastic improvement, do you know what I mean? From year to year.
Yeah.
To improve yourself by, 10 plus wins. So I think as long as Phoenix shows, a general trajectory in the up, then that might be enough to sort of keep him happy. Him and DeAndre Ayton make a pretty, pretty formidable sort of 1-2 punch there. They got Ricky Rubio there as well, who I still really like as one of the more pure point guards that's in the league at the moment. Like he's a poor man's Luka Doncic. He's that European play. He's not going to get you 45 points, you know, probably on any given night. But he is, yeah, he is absolutely going to make the right decision most of the time, whether it's maybe not so much shot wise, but he finds the open man, and you know, as to be a pure point guard like that, and to have somebody like Devin Booker on your team, that's only going to make Booker better.
Yeah. On the other side with that, for that week, they never got mentioned that much, but the Celtics seemed to, that whole week, they were just on fire. Like every team they were going up against, you know, if I look at the game against, they played against the Raptors, you know, Raptors were highly favored, but they, and you know, 122-100 in that game. They were just, they played phenomenal that week, at least alone.
Well, that was the Raptors only loss.
Yeah.
From the restart. That was it. Raptors went 7-1.
You're right. I just think a lot of people haven't discounted the Celtics, but they're not really talking up the Celtics. And I don't know if it's because I was trying to sort of work out why. Is it because like Jason Tatum isn't really sort of outshining, or probably the other one, Kemba Walker didn't play a lot of minutes.
No, well, I think it's just they're just trying to sort of get Kemba back into the groove. You know, Jason Tatum didn't have the best start of the restart. It was pretty ordinary in their first couple of games. You know, started to sort of light it up at the back end of that first week, and then into the second week. You know, sort of coming back to where he was, because he had like a historic, I think it was February, like where he had the most points. I think he was averaging the most points per game. He was shooting the best three point percentage.
Yeah.
You know, he was just having a phenomenal month, and you know, this sort of, you know, stoppage couldn't have come at a worse time for somebody like him.
Yeah.
Who's sort of making that ascension after having a down year, to say the least, last year. A little bit of turmoil at Boston. But, you know, now he's starting to hit his straps again. So, you know, I think...
Especially in the first round. My God.
No, well, that's right. You know, their first round.
You're right, but, like, you know, it probably didn't come at the worst time. But on the flip side, coming into this first round against the 76ers, they've been great. Well, he's been really good.
Yeah, absolutely. It all just comes down to Kemba being healthy and how much he can sort of contribute. They have lost Gordon Hayward for the next 4 weeks, so that's, I guess, your third option there. That will hurt them going forward. Probably not so much in this first round series.
I don't think so.
That is definitely going to stunt them in a lot of ways, I think, because they don't have the greatest depth as well, you know.
No, they don't. No, you're right. Yeah, they really don't. Going back to that week you said just with the Toronto Raptors, how good's your boy Van Vliet playing?
Oh man, he is just man.
Like they're a funny team because, I mean, obviously they lost Kawhi at the start of the year, purely, you know, no fault their own, but they are clearly playing above expectations.
Oh, yeah, they're totally punching above their weight. And that's the thing, you know, the Spicy P hasn't even really improved that much on last year. Like, it's just, yeah, it's they don't trot out bad defenders. Like, most of those guys on that team are good defenders, even your guys on the bench, even guys like Norman Powell. And yeah, Serge Ibaka, Marcus Saul, they're all decent defenders. So most teams that play them are going to have trouble. You know, it's going to take a special effort to sort of get a win over Toronto, and that's been case in point throughout this restart. You know, 7-1, and that's, like we said, you know, the only loss was to Boston. So I think, you know, a lot of people, I guess, like they say, are sleeping, so to speak, on Toronto. I still am. I'm just, it's going to take if it's going to be a 1-2 finals for the East, like I really thought it was going to be Boston that was going to be there, but I'm not so sure now with the loss of Hayward. And honestly, going through all these games and all the results and everything like that, what the hell do we know?
Well, that's right. Technically, like I'd even throw Miami in the mix there. Technically, you know.
I really think this is a chance now for Miami or Toronto, because the Bucks have looked extremely out of sync. You know, play wise, they haven't looked very good at all in this restart. Yeah, 3-5. Yeah, and that's, I think it's just one of those teams where they're just trying to sort of find that right mix of who they're going to play on their bench.
I think
it's just, you know, Giannis is pretty much balling out, throughout this period, you know, nearly 28 points a game, but he just hasn't. Yeah, look, you know, that's what I mean. Splash Mountain. They need more from him. Chris Middleton has got to become more consistent. And that was their problem last year. They couldn't trust him all the time. And then when the game starts to be grinded out and slow possessions and you don't get into transition, which you see that they like to do, and you have to spread the floor, you absolutely have to spread the floor to get the lane open for Giannis. He couldn't quite get the job done, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, and you're right in saying that, especially in that next week when they lost to the Raptors. The highest scorer in that game for the Bucks was Chris Korver. So just to put it in perspective of Chris Middleton, not, you know, they paid him a lot of money to keep him there, and he's not consistent enough. Exactly what you're saying. When that game they lost against the Raptors, 114-106. Yes. Giannis didn't play that game, but, you know, that's where Chris Middleton should be stepping up.
Yeah, absolutely. He should. Yeah, that's his team then. Yeah. And he's the one that's got to step into that void and go, okay, I'm going to take us to the promised land, because Giannis gets into foul trouble a lot.
Yeah.
That seems to be happening a lot more, which I guess is sort of a worrying sign. But, you know, he's an aggressive type defender as well. So, yeah, and it's through no fault of his own, really, but like you said, you know, Kyle Korver was the top scorer, and that just absolutely can't happen like that. That can't happen. They've got Eric Bledsoe back. Those younger guys, I think they played a fairly decent spread of players as well. Yeah, they played a lot of their bench players, you know, DiVincenzo, George Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marvin Williams, like they got him in a trade, a veteran from Charlotte this year. So, they need those guys. Like, he had two shots in 20 minutes. Like, that can't happen either. Somebody like a Wesley Matthews or somebody like that, they need those guys. You know, him and Middleton have got to be your guys to be able to spread the floor. And obviously, you know, Kyle Korver is a super streaky shooter as well. But they need those guys in clutch moments to be able to free up the lane for Giannis to go to work.
Well, and that's in saying that, then where do you put that? And I agree with you, but, you know, you've got someone like Brook Lopez there that is a very, very good shooter. But why do you think it's interesting that Giannis gets a lot of foul trouble considering Brook Lopez is there? You know, both Lopez brothers are there. Like, just the, you know, they should
be. Robin Lopez is a much better defender than what Brook is. Like, I think that's always been the contrast between the two twins there. Like, there's always been that Robin Lopez has always been your sort of, you know, your dirty, not so much a dirty player as in, you know, like fouls or anything like that, but, you know, your dirty grind them out sort of player. We'll get you rebounds. We'll defend hard. Might be able to get you some points here and there.
Yeah,
but Brook Lopez has always been the more talented offensive player, and as the last sort of 3 to 4 years have gone by, he's really started to develop that 3-point shooting stroke.
Yeah. So what I'm getting at, clearly then that's probably the answer, that Giannis is getting into foul trouble because Brook's not, you know, getting back there and creating that crowding the key because he must have been getting the back there enough.
He's not even that good of a rebounder. Like for his size and stature, he's not a terrific rebounder. You know, in all the stops that he's had, he'd be lucky to be a double digit career rebounder. So and yeah, for that's what I mean. Some guys have got it. Some guys don't.
You're right.
I think a lot would be that. Yeah, he would sort of. Whether or not he's the best perimeter defender as well, and there'd be a lot of people that drag him out a little bit, whereas Giannis would be more of that sort of, you know, stay back a little bit because he's so long. Giannis is so long that it's even as a perimeter shooter, it would be tough to get a shot over the top of him. So people would more likely try and take him to the basket than try and shoot over him.
That week of starting on the 10th of August, that. I mean, a lot of good games, but the standout day for me was that game when nearly every roughie won the game. The Wizards beat the Celtics, the Kings beat the Lakers, the Grizzlies beat the Bucks, the Suns beat the Mavericks. So that whole day, like if you had a multi on, you'd be
you'd be rolling in it.
That's a
punter's nightmare, really. Like that's just not what you need.
What do you think? So yeah, I mean, obviously the Kings, you know, again, another team that was just like the Pelicans that were making up the numbers. But do you like them going forward? Like their lineup, I guess.
I do.
You're a huge Buddy Hield fan. I know that.
Oh yeah, no, Buddy Buckets, love Buddy Buckets. Like you know, the Pels had to do what they had to do in, you know, trading him to Sacramento to take a chance on DeMarcus Cousins, which, you know, obviously was a bit of a failure. But he's been, unfortunately, he's been a bit of a failure since he's left Sacramento, which is through no fault of his own, except his, you know, feeble body mechanics at the moment. He just can't seem to stay healthy, but. Look, that they're one of those teams. Once again, they're in the West, and you think they should have made a bit more of a jump, you know, in trajectory this year than what they did. I think they started off the year fairly. They started off the year hot, Sacramento, and I think that surprised a lot of people. And they cooled off, and they cooled off real quick.
But they also cooled off, I think, because Marvin Bagley went down injured.
Well, that's right. You know, you take Bagley out of that side. You know, super talented. That's going to be tough. And then they've had an array of injuries. I think Harrison Barnes missed games throughout the year. I'm not sure if Buddy Hield's really liking his role off the bench. I think that's probably the only thing he could say about Buddy Buckets. He's still scoring well, and it looks like he's sort of taking it with, you know, relative good humor. But going forward, they have to find a spot for him in that starting lineup.
But
when you've got Bogdanovic there, you know, he's balling.
Balling Bogdan. But see, to me, you're right. I love Bogdan. I think he's a great shooter, great looking shooter. But Bogdan's also 6'6". It's always 6'6" is one of those weird, like, to me, like, you know, could he push to a small forward position? But then you got Harrison Barnes.
But you can play, a lot of teams play three guard lineups now anyway. So, look at Houston. They're essentially playing five guards.
I agree.
It can be done. You've got to have, if you're going to play a three guard lineup like that, to me, I think you've got to have a decent ball distributor. And De'Aaron Fox is more of a scorer than, you know, your traditional type old school point guard that's going to be able to find the right man. Like he's going to be looking for his shot first rather than sort of having, you know, to distribute the ball. Like he might, you know, off the top of my head, he'd probably only be, you know, a six assist type guy throughout the season. So that's got to be better. Somebody like Damian Lillard, who's a super scorer.
Yeah.
No, is averaging, you know, for this year, he averaged 8 assists per game. So, you know, everything goes through him. you know, as an offense, whether it's ball distribution or points. So he could do that. You know, De'Aaron Fox is only young, so that could that could get better.
Yeah.
And just sort of looking up his statistics now, I'm close. So 6.8 assists per game. So 7 a game. Like that, that could get better. He could get that, if he could get that up to 8 or 9. And that's on the team, you know, that's a couple of missed shots.
Yeah.
So that is what it is there. But I think they've got a decent sort of young nucleus, and I think they could essentially be doing what New Orleans is doing now, is looking for that veteran that's going to help them out locker room wise.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, help them out, you know, be that sort of a perimeter threat, you know, a la, you know, like somebody like a JJ Redick, like he could fit in. Yeah, he could plug and play into a lot of teams.
Well, to me, that's where Harrison Barnes comes into it. Like, a veteran of sorts. He's only 28.
Well, that's right, but he's been around for a long time now.
He should be, to me, he would be the perfect complement off the bench, personally.
He'll be going into his seventh year next year. So he's been around a while now. He's been on championship teams with the Warriors. So he knows what winning's all about, even though he was only a young player when they were doing that. Mm. But he knows... he knows what winning's about. So that he looks like a quiet sort of person too, Harrison Barnes. Like, he doesn't look like sort of like that vocal leader like some people are. But not all leaders are like that. You know, you can do that with your actions on the floor as well. So, but yeah, I really like what Sacramento are doing. Vlade Divac has stood down. Whatever role he was in, the GM or you know, VP of basketball operations, he stepped down. So a lot of people sort of like to kill him about some of the moves that they've made recently. So with sort of him out of the picture now, they'll be looking for a new person to sort of step into that role. And hopefully they can attract, once again, a small market team who's had success in the past. You know, look at those teams from the early 2000s. You know, they acquired a lot of those guys via trade, and then you've got to draft well. So, you know, that those teams of the early 2000s, probably one of the best teams that never really won anything.
So that was you segued into that perfectly. They'll pick 12 at this year's draft. Do they then, because it's not a D draft, do they trade that for a veteran, or what do they do? Do they look for another?
Yeah, I mean, you could go in. Yeah, I mean, but those teams that are sort of in that, you know, 10 to 14 range, and even teams that are outside the lottery, there could be a lot of shuffling, whether it be on draft night or, you know, between now and draft night, trying to sort of get the guy. I think teams will be looking at the guy that they think is the best fit for their team, and not when the draft comes up, who's the best player available. Because this could be a real super hit and miss draft, and some of these teams can't afford to have, you know, a missed opportunity at, you know, at a lottery pick.
I'm totally shocked that the Lakers somehow have a first rounder still for that year, for next year. So I don't get it, but they are number 28. So I don't know how.
Well, that's it. Don't get too used to that, because you won't have a first round pick until 2037. So,
2037. Yeah. Well, that's right. Finishing off that week, I guess, before we sort of talk about the how the whole sort of the 8 games went, any other sort of teams, I guess, really stood out to you?
Whether they stood out good or stood out bad, obviously Memphis is a talking point that, yeah, they just totally, you know, pooed and spewed all over themselves throughout these 8 games, only going 2-6.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just couldn't have been a worse run for them. Obviously losing Triple J. I think they lost him in the third game. I think he had an ankle injury, I'm pretty sure. So but losing him, torn meniscus. So, and I was in the New Orleans game. So and that was one of the games that they lost. That's one of New Orleans' wins. They got, you know, Zion actually played pretty good in that game. Like, he had 25 minutes. They were slowly sort of bringing his minutes on. That was an extreme downward trend for Memphis. So I think they were a bit of a talking point. They basically threw away a perfectly good opportunity to sort of make a little bit of noise. They probably weren't going to do much against the Lakers anyway, but, you know, a lot of teams just sort of go on, okay, hooray, we made the playoffs. That's a successful year. So, yeah, now they ended up being in the 14 slot, and their draft pick now goes to Boston. So that's sort of, the draft implications for there. I think it was only top six protected, and then it would have reverted to Boston next year unprotected. So that's probably bad. That's probably bad for Boston, because, you know what I mean? Like, you know, if they had got top six protection, obviously it would have went to Memphis, and then next year unprotected. So who knows what Memphis will do next year? They could be, you know, another, this could be a bit of a fluke year for them. And how much are they going to improve next year if they do improve next year?
Boston always seemed, it's kudos to the GM there, but they always seem to be in that top 10, top 14, top 15 every year.
Well, they have been, you know, Danny Ainge is a good GM. And you know, since every he basically, year. Well, that's right. Well, he fleeced Brooklyn out of all their picks.
If we go all the way back to that.
That's right.
Yeah.
To offload Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. Like, that was brilliant.
Oh my God. Which, look, I mean, look, you know, if we're going back to that, theoretically,
one of the greatest fleece jobs that's gone around.
Yeah, look, theoretically, it wasn't the worst decision. Theoretically,
you could see, you know, the theory behind it. It just absolutely didn't work out that way.
They caught him. They did it one or two years ago, it'd be completely different. They just caught
Hit their decline, and they hit their decline very quickly.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So finishing off with that, I guess with the eight games that they played, I mean, the whole talking point to me with the eight rounds was the 8-0 Phoenix Suns that still didn't make the playoffs, unfortunately.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah. They still had to have a few things go their way. It come down to that last game, the Trailblazers and the Nets. If the Trailblazers had of one, which they did, then that essentially shut Phoenix out, and then it was Memphis in the play-in game. If the Nets had have won, and the Nets were bored, like Caris LeVert had 37 points in that game. He was carrying Brooklyn. And I thought, to me, two surprise teams were Brooklyn and San Antonio, the way that they played. I thought Brooklyn played really well for the caliber of player that they had on their team. And so does San Antonio. San Antonio had five wins. They were there in the first 10 days of this restart. They sort of tapered it off a little bit. But they were there or thereabouts, man. I really didn't think it was competitive. But sort of circling back to that Trailblazers-Brooklyn game, you know, obviously we tried to watch as many games as humanly possible, but there's just been so many. That game was a really good game. You know, Lillard had one of his, you know, sort of mediocre games at only 42 points after the hot run that he had. Like, he had 51 and then 61 and then 42 in that Brooklyn game. So, you know, 42 points, that's a walk.
20 less. Doesn't that just sound like so much? Like, he's 20 less. That's just ridiculous. Like, Striking at 20 points in a game, and he's gone down 20 points.
Yeah, so he limped into that game with 42 points. Like,
I would have loved to see, but the playing game, if it end up, if Phoenix and Trailblazers, if that
would have been smoking.
No, that would have just been a first round playoff kind of caliber anyway. You know, having those possibly only playing two games, but they could end up, you know, playing. Oh, that would have been awesome to see.
So the 61 that Lillard had was against the Mavericks, and they absolutely needed that because the Trailblazers only won by three. And once again, you know, a huge offensive explosion game, like 134-131. Like, God damn. Somebody play some defense around here. And then, yeah, and then once again, you know, the 51 points that he had was against Philly, and they needed all of those because they only beat them by 3 points. So their wins, while wins, you know, as a whole, haven't been super convincing. So, yeah, they're sort of them going forward with their playoff series against the Lakers. We'll see. That's what I mean. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, you know, they got in, and that's all they had to do. So the playoff or the play-in game, which I hope they never, ever, 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 ever think about doing again.
I don't think they will. I don't think they will.
It, you know, obviously the 8 seed had the advantage. They only had to win one game, and the 9 seed had to win 2 games.
Hence why Memphis pooped it away, because technically they should have had that A seed, and then
absolutely.
And they shouldn't have had a playing game at all. Technically, there shouldn't have been a playing game.
No, exactly.
They wrecked it themselves. But talk about a team that really, I guess, look, they did rest some players towards the back end of their 8 games, but the 76ers were just, yeah, they were not a standout to me. I know Ben Simmons got injured, but
and he's had surgery as well, so you know that's pretty much him dusted for the rest of this, you know, the rest of this season anyway. They're a team that's severely under pressure, and I guess sort of underachieving for, I guess, the three star guys that they have on that squad. But Tobias Harris, who's getting a nice fat contract, you know, Joel Embiid, who's arguably the best center in the game when healthy.
Should be the best center in
the
game.
He should be. He absolutely should be. And he come out at the start of the year saying, oh, I'm not going to talk. I want to be defensive player of the year and MVP, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it just, and that's what I mean. Like, you know, he's come out and he did what he did.
Should be. That's the words we shouldn't be using. He should be. He should be like what Shaq was. He should be absolutely dominant. But he isn't.
I wouldn't say Shaq like. I would think he's a more, you know, he's a more thick Hakeem Olajuwon. He's got good footwork.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
He's got good post moves, but do you know what I mean? Like he's more of a finesse type big guy, like the Dream was, you know, going back to that sort of era. Like you guys that were in that era, you know, Alonzo Mourning, David Robinson, Dikembe Mutombo, almost like a Patrick Ewing had a good jump shot. Obviously he couldn't shoot the three very well. But yeah, he sort of moves around like him. He's not super quick, but when you get him in the post, his moves are still elusive. And, you know, Pat was like that, you know, most, you know, a lot of his career. You know, obviously didn't quite have the success that he would have liked there at New York. But I think, you know, he's in the mold of that sort of type of player.
Should be. Yeah, but that's the difference. Really... We keep saying should because he's hot and cold.
He's got the ability, and the thing is, he's got the ability to stretch the floor as well. Like he's got a nice stroke on him. He shoots the free throw well. Yeah, just during this restart, he shot it at 75%, but I think he even shoots it at a higher clip than that.
Yeah.
Throughout the season, he didn't shoot the three ball very well throughout this restart. He only shot at 9%. So that's not terrific. Over 7 games, and he likes him some 3 points. So I think him, you know, in the mold of a hybrid between Patrick Ewing and Hakeem Olajuwon, I think is him. But he just has to stay healthy. He's just got to, you know, he's getting all sorts of different ailments now. You know, he had those ankle spurs. I don't know if it was ankle spurs or shin spurs that he had to start his career. Then he had the bad back, and it just ballooned on and snowballed on to different things. So, you know, it's all well and good to go out there and talk the talk, and he does walk the walk, but he needs to be better. And now that everything is sort of focused on him, he's got to be averaging more than 20 points a game. He's got to be taking 20 shots a game.
I'd agree with that. Now, I guess sort of segueing into it then, you mentioned, well, we mentioned the 76ers, the coaches that are possibly, you know, I will say this word, on the bubble, so to speak.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're not on the bubble. They're on the clock.
Well, Brett Brown
is absolutely on the clock. If they get swept in this series against Boston, which is a very high possibility, that could be it.
Yeah.
What do you think of that combo though of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid? Do they work?
I liked at the start the move, him moving him to the power forward or point forward, but a power forward, Ben Simmons.
Anyone can bring the ball up now these days.
LeBron, that's exactly right. I think he's better in the post, Ben Simmons, because he can't, you know, and he can get the ball into. I think they can work.
He's the king of the shot within 6 feet. He's essentially the new Shaq, but he's not as thick and he's not 7'1".
I think it could work. I think it's the rest of them. I think Tobias Harris was, I'm not saying the waste of money because he's not a terrible player, but I think that was a terrible contract. And I would love Al Horford, but I don't like Al Horford on that side. So I don't know where the hell you put him.
That's it. I think they have to reduce Horford's role. Like Horford's got to be more that you know, just that veteran presence and not sort of, you know, that they need to extract. They need to play him more efficiently. Playing him more minutes isn't necessarily going to be more efficient. The only thing I see with Simmons and Embiid is it just clogs up the lane too much.
Because he doesn't stay out there and shoot the three.
That's right. Embiid shoots the three better and more willingly than what Simmons does. So you could almost reverse the roles. But even so, you still clog up the lane too much with two guys that are going to want to be very dominant down low. Ben Simmons is more cutting to the lane and getting into the hoop rather than that sort of post type play, which, you know, sort of essentially is non-existent in the NBA nowadays. But yeah, there are certain guys that can play that, you know, and he's one of them.
Do you like Ben Simmons as a player?
I think the non-willingness to shoot is hurting him. Because everybody loves to put these videos out on Twitter and Facebook and everything. Oh, look, Ben Simmons can hit the three. Everybody loses their mind when he hits in preseason. Like, God damn, like, are we not? That's what this league is now. Like, it's Robin Lopez so can hilarious. Hit threes. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's insane. But Boban can hit threes. He's 7'4" and he's got a hand. When he puts it on a basketball, it looks like me holding a golf ball.
Boban is insane. Boban's Boban.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's guys like that. Yeah, Kristaps Porzingis, 7'3", and has got one of the purest and cleanest strokes of anybody. You know, he has to make you respect that shot because they're just not doing that. They just lay off him, and then you clog the lane. And yeah, then you become a little bit too predictable.
That's the answer I'm looking for. Yeah, like so he's a good player.
He's a good player. He's a great player, and he's going to be, you know, he'll be in that All-Star conversation and All-NBA team conversation for years to come. But he has to develop it just has to be a consistent 3-point shot. And like I said, you have to make him, if he's going to take it, he has to make you respect it. And he's got to knock down them open ones.
Yeah, no, yeah, okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then, but then from what you're saying is, because you asked it to me, I don't think you like the combo of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Is that because they clog up the D?
That's all I said. You know, offensively, they just clog up the paint too much.
Yeah.
And whether or not that's coaching as well, you know, there's got to be. It's coaching. That's, you know, Elton Brand's the GM there. He's got to be looking hard to sort of find players that's going to spread your floor out. So both of those guys are going to have the room to be able to work.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's what they're missing. That's what I mean. The Al Horford free agent.
They need multiple floor spreaders, not just one. You know, Tobias Harris is a good 3-point shooter. You know, Al Horford is he's the guy that's what I'm talking about. You leave Al Horford open at the top of the key, and he's going to bury it on you. That's what Ben Simmons has to be.
So is there any other coaches that are on the fringe that could possibly be fired?
Well, yeah, you know, like we said earlier, Alvin Gentry sort of got surprised at his firing. I guess I sort of was. I think the Pels were going to probably stick tried and true and give him a run, a full year with this squad. But I think that they're trying to make the move now in getting rid of him to try and absolutely secure Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, the other coach, you know, the Chicago Bulls got rid of their coach, Jim Boylan.
Yeah, Jim Boylan. Yeah, he got which that was coming. Like that was probably never going to work. Obviously, Brooklyn getting rid of Atkinson, which I thought was a very strange move, and that seemed like so long ago that they got rid of him. It looked like that KD and Kyrie were going to be happy playing under him. So yeah. I don't know what actually happened there with them getting rid of Kenny Atkinson. So, you know, he could be in contention for one of these other jobs as well, you know, either at New Orleans or at, you know, at Chicago, somewhere like that, you know, even at Philadelphia. There's some insane rumors out there that teams are trying to pry Greg Popovich away from San Antonio.
Oh, and that won't happen.
That's just not going to happen. That won't happen. It's not going to happen. He'll retire before he coaches anyone but the silver and black.
I did like, although like they're just an abominable team, but I do like the signing of Tom Thibodeau at the New York Knicks.
At the Knicks, I think that's a great pick. They're a little bit of hard nose edge.
Yeah.
You know, he's a very defensive minded coach. He's got the reputation of, you know, sort of beating and running people into the ground a little bit. But, you know, he's been out of the coaching game for, what, a year and a half, 2 years now. So, I would say 18 months now that he's been gone. So whether or not he could learn from those, you know, from those mistakes, well, there's so much mistakes, but, you know, whether he can change that little bit of coaching philosophy and be, you know, still be hard-nosed because that's what he's, you know, that's what he's known for.
Yeah.
But he's, yeah, to try and extract the most out of that talent, you know, and you don't want to say use the term loosely, but, you know, that talent and the 16 power forwards that the New York Knicks have.
The one that I think that's on the bubble that could possibly, depending on what happens in this postseason, is the Milwaukee Bucks coach, Mike Budenholzer.
Purely
because...
It's championship or bust.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's it. It's championship or bust. If they don't make the playoffs this year, make the finals this year, I think
if they don't get into the NBA finals, I don't think he's in the hot seat, but...
I don't think he is, but I don't know, like...
Yeah, they you can't... That's, I mean, he's been a revelation with him and how he sort of, you know, brought Giannis on and made him into, you know, put a system in place where it's made Giannis a very successful regular season player, not so much successful during the playoffs, but they're there or thereabouts. But yeah, I understand where that's sort of coming from. It's for the last couple of years, it's been championship or bust. Really, so...
Well, I guess it depends. It depends if, yeah, purely... I'm only saying that because, you know, more for the fact of does it keep Giannis... it depends if it keeps Giannis happy or not, I suppose, because that's where it's going to come down to.
No, that's right, yeah. That's absolutely where it's going to come down to. If management goes to Greek Freak and says, do you like playing under Budenholzer? And he says yes or no, we'll determine what management does at the Bucks. Absolutely.
I think so. I mean, because they don't. That's it. If it's championship or bust, if they don't, like, I don't know who else they're going to be able to get in because their cap's pretty thin as well. So.
No, that's right. Yeah, they've got a lot of money tied up. Yeah, they've got a lot of money tied up in a fair few players. The only other coach I could sort of think of that may be on the clock and has probably been on the clock for a couple of years now is Mike D'Antoni.
Ooh, interesting. Why do you say that? Is it the same sort
well,
of...
Well, yeah, for them, yeah, that's why they made all the moves that they made this year, you know, essentially turfing CP3 for Russell Westbrook. Like, they've gone to this, they're trying to revolutionize again the game. They're taking just an obscene amount of three-pointers. Yeah, they're just the phrase live and die by the three. Like, they are absolutely, it's just feast or famine. It's you're either at the cup or you'd be on the 3-point line. Like, you would think that would be a fairly easy team to defend, but when you've got one of the best one-on-one attacking players in James Harden, like, just some games he's just absolutely unstoppable. And you know where he's going. You know he's hitting that left hand.
Yeah.
And you still can't stop him.
You still can't stop him, yeah.
It's unbelievable what he does. But when he goes cold, especially from 3-point, oof, it looks bad.
Especially with them going to this small ball lineup too, that they wild traded and looked for, really. And you know, so far it's doing okay.
It's doing okay, but it's going to be, when it comes down to, once again, transition baskets are going to come less frequent throughout the playoffs. Russell Westbrook loves getting out, you know, and playing that transition style of game. He's out at the moment. It looks like he'll be back soon, but did he have a toe issue that he had throughout the start? I think it might have even happened in that first week. Down, and that's really sort of, that hurts them a little bit. And then once again, you know, they've got guys like Robert Covington there, who's just not, I don't think, is playing quite up to standard for what they thought they were going to get from him. Like, he's been pretty ordinary since the restart. But just sort of, yeah, as you circle back around to D'Antoni, yeah, he's the innovator of the 8 seconds or less offense, and he's just trying to take that to the next level. Like, it's just on steroids at the moment. And he's sort of got the right players there at the moment. It's either like I said 3-point shooting. They love the corner three. PJ Tucker is the king of the corner three at the moment. The way that they play, like we said, you know, feast or famine, whether it's at the cup or beyond the arc. But I think, you know, if this run doesn't bring success, you know, if they don't make it past the second round, then D'Antoni could absolutely, you know, be on the chopping block.
And he also, just finishing up, he has not signed a contract for next year, or he's not under contract for next year, which is interesting.
There's also, you know, rumors floating about that New Orleans could look at bringing him in if he doesn't re-sign with Houston, which I really don't know how to feel about that. I really don't.
he's a very, very good winning record. Extremely
no,
good
he does,
record,
but it's, so. I mean, if this, yeah, this team, you know, with what they've got at the moment, I'm talking about the Pelicans. They're just crying out for success immediately, which I still think is unrealistic. You know, even with if all trajectory is going the right way, then Zion is going to be a generational talent. Yeah, just listening to, you know, fans of the team, they want instant success right now. Like, they just want it now. They don't want to go through what Philadelphia did in the so-called process, in inverted commas. They want success immediately, which I still think is very unrealistic. The people, yeah, the fans of the Pels, we just got to be patient. And as long as they're showing improvement, and as long as next year they're not one of the bottom five defensive teams in the league, and can cut down turnovers, then they could definitely sort of make a shake of it next year.
So finishing up then on those 8 games, I mean, a few of these will be pretty evident, but did you have a all-bubble first team?
Yeah, I guess I think there's four very obvious names that you could go through for, you know, that all restart team. You know, obviously the two guards in Damian Lillard and Devin Booker, I think, sort of speak for themselves. Yeah, if we go a traditional type, all, you know, same sort of thing as all NBA team, if you want to go two guards, two forwards and a center, or, you know, three forwards. I'd like to go super traditional and try and find a center that's worthwhile putting in there. That was extremely hard to do.
Very hard to do.
Look, I thought a noteworthy person that didn't make the first team for me is Caris LeVert. Yeah. I thought he was really good. Somebody like a Jason Tatum who was like you said, got off to a bit of a slow start in the bubble. Damn it, said it again. throughout the restart, like he looked better as time went on. Donovan Mitchell, whose shooting percentage is pretty ordinary at the moment, like he's shooting under 40%, so he's taking a lot of shots to get his points. Looked pretty good. So, but your forwards, were, you know, obviously was the flash in the pan, T.J. Warren. We really talk to him. Give me a break, like to just don't.
But hey, he had a great, you know.
Right, and that's why you've got to put him in there because it's an 8-game stretch.
31 points, 6 rebounds, you know, he played pretty good.
Like his first game back, like it was a 53-point eruption. Like it is nobody. Himself could have seen that coming. Like just
No. But just yeah. No,
it
sorry.
Is, like I'm telling you, like look at what he's done recently in the past five games.
Yeah, I agree.
He's back to his old mediocre self, scoring 14 points, getting 5 or 6 rebounds. That's just what he is. But no, absolutely.
He deserved to be in.
Obviously Luka Doncic. Yeah. You can put in there as well. He's been phenomenal.
I probably would have been in the NBA first team, not the NBA. Well,
He'll be NBA first team for sure. Once those player awards come out, whenever the hell they're going to bring them out. Look, to find a center was a little difficult. Whether you could go a forward as well to sort of throw in there. I thought Kristaps Porzingis, even though he only played 6 games, in those games were pretty good. I think he only had the one off game where he had 14 points. Most of the other games he was pretty good. You could probably put Giannis Antetokounmpo in there as well. I think was pretty solid. Averaging a double double. You know, was he 28 points and 12 rebounds? So that's pretty good. So you could go either one of those guys as your fifth player. I don't know about you, but I think they were pretty evident.
I think so. I mean, it really didn't change that much for me. I pretty much had the same for you. I would have, you know, if we stick in traditional, I would have left it as what you had. If we didn't go in traditional, I would have had James Harden in there. But I can, you know, tradition, it's the way it's always been picked. I mean,
that's right. That's just what it is. Yeah, you can't just have an all NBA team that's just 5 guards. Like that's just silly. That's not how it is.
It's kind of the way the game.
But that's what I mean. Shit, yeah. If you don't call it that, you just say here's the 5 best players of the restart.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like you don't call it, you know, an all.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what they should be calling it.
Like did you have somebody like Nikola Vucevic? Like he's been great for Orlando.
Yeah. Orlando is a sleeper because, you know, they are technically home. I know they're in the bubble, but you know they'd be very familiar of the surroundings.
They're the only team out of 22 and now 16 that have got that essentially have a home, you know, home court advantage.
They're used to the surroundings, the weather, the everything. You know, they are used to the surroundings. I don't think they're always spending time in Disneyland.
They can't stay at home.
No, of course not.
They have to stay, you know, on the premises of Disney World there, which I'm sure there's worse places to be.
Yeah, I'm sure there would be. Did you have an MVP of the 8-game bubble?
Well, yeah, to me, you could, and it's got to be one of those guards. Realistically, it's got to be Devin Booker. who led Phoenix to 8-0, or Damian Lillard. You could go either or.
I only had Devin Booker down purely because he did everything in his power, and they got an 8-0 to get to that playoff game, or the play-in game, playoff game.
Yeah, that's right. And still.
So, and they had a pretty brutal schedule. Like no one.
They did have to mean they had a tough schedule. So did San Antonio. That's what I mean. That's why I think San Antonio's 5-3 is really impressive.
Yeah. I agree, but I just, you know, if we're speaking of San Antonio, they're another side that I think's a piece away. They could be back in the playoffs as well. I don't know who or what they go after, but you know, I think, I don't know. What do you? Yeah,
They know how to find gems in the draft. So,
well, they're gonna have the 11th pick, so it'll be interesting.
They've got a lottery pick this year, which is for the first time in, you know, that they've actually earned a lottery pick, not traded to get into a lottery pick, but the first time they've earned a lottery pick in 22 years. And you know, obviously that coincides with them getting Tim Duncan as the number one pick in 98. So. That's unfortunate that their playoff streak's been lost. But once again, they are who they are. They were a pretty poor team. They had injuries. Obviously the loss of Kawhi Leonard a couple of years ago sort of set them back a little bit. An aging LaMarcus Aldridge there. DeMar DeRozan still shows you that he can get it done in the regular season, and he was still pretty good during this restart. He nearly averaged 22 points. So
I think that's
pretty good.
And DeJounte Murray, that's another sort of key for them.
And Derek White, like, they're your future. DeJounte Murray, Derek White, they're your big time. They're your future.
My thing is it's the player that, you know, what do you do with him is LaMarcus Aldridge. He'd be an interesting one. He's on the wrong side of 30. He's 35, but.
He's got one of the best mid-range games I've seen on a power forward. He's an old school type power forward. His mid-range game is amazing.
If the Spurs were, you know, thinking about it serious, that'd be like a nice little trade piece for Golden State.
Just popped into my head right there.
I just think if they, you know, if they gave him the second pick for the 11th pick and LaMarcus, I'm sure that'd have to be something else because of the dollars. But, you know, that'd be very, you know, very, very interesting. But it depends. Again, they'd go straight after a James Wiseman then, surely.
Well, you would think so. Like we said, you know, if Golden State look like that they're going to keep their pick. Which sort of nobody's got really an inkling of what I think, you know, there's a lot of experts out there that say, yes, it should absolutely be traded for, you know, a not even a solid veteran. I think they can get a good haul for that second pick. I think not as much as what it would be in previous drafts. Like that number two pick as collateral is not going to hold as much water as what it would in previous drafts. But if there's a team out there that's absolutely set on a player that could go high in the draft, then yeah, they could throw the farm at him.
I just think so, you know, someone like, if you know, obviously it'd be great for them. It'd be definitely great for the Warriors getting someone like a Marcus Aldridge. But you know, if for San Antonio to start building again, if they had that number two pick, God, they would. And you know, with Popovich there, that's
right.
Number two player could be a superstar player in four or 5 years.
That's right. But coaching, you know, him coaching you, and if you're a young
Tim Duncan
player,
there,
then you
like,
think,
oh my God,
be, yeah, exactly. Becky that Hammond, would be, Becky Hammond sort of emerging as a coach of the future. So you know, they've got, and they're getting the right credentials under Greg Popovich. So, and they've got to try and get in as much as humanly possible, because like we said, sort of at the start of the year, I think that USA basketball debacle at the World Championships has taken years off his career and off his life.
Yeah, there's a couple other
He didn't need it at all.
You know, having his wife pass as well. There's a few factors. Right, yeah. You're right. You're exactly right. I think
he didn't need that at this point of his career.
Oh no. And that was none of his fault either. No. You're right, but that was none of his fault. It was just a whole huge debacle. You know, if you look at huge debacle, like case in point, the two games that played here in Australia, you know, they were just, Yeah, they were poor. Like, you know, it'd be great to see.
They were poor in the first game at one, and then they got beaten. So,
yeah,
I think that's. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, he will be coaching from, again, but.
No, absolutely.
Well, that'll do it, I guess. Unless you had anything else to finish on with the bubble.
No, I guess if we just want to quickly go through what the playoff series are going to be, as we sort of run through, we'll be doing the playoffs round by round, and not week by week. So once the first round is totally complete, then we'll come out and we'll give you sort of a little bit of something with each round.
Which honestly, the way they play these games in the bubble, you know, the round one could be over in about 2 weeks. They pump out this game so quickly.
It's just every 2 days. It's just it's in. There's no travel days. There's nothing. Right. Like, you know, these playoffs are going to be bizarre. No home court advantage. I always am going to look back at once these teams start to get deeper into the playoffs, how do they stay motivated? I get it. A championship is going to motivate you, but when you don't have the adulation of the crowd behind you pumping you up, you know, you see guys when they get and ones or they hit big shots and they're yelling and screaming, that gets the crowd going as well. With nobody in the stands, like it's just going to have to be how people keep themselves motivated.
Family. That's why they're coming in. Families allowed in during these playoffs. Select them out of family.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's that will help them. But yeah, what I mean? Like, it's just going to be how they stay motivated as they pump through.
Yeah.
So yeah, if we just quickly want to go through what the series are going to be, and then I guess we'll wrap it up.
Yeah. So we'll start on the Eastern sort of conference side. So the Bucks will be up against the Magic, which. You know, again, another team. Don't fall asleep on the Magic. I definitely want to fall asleep on the Magic, being they're technically home, but they're not.
That's right. Yeah.
The Raptors and
I'd say Milwaukee in five.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I feel I'd have to be the Raptors and the Nets.
It could be a competitive series, but I don't think so. Just the Raptors are on such a good they're in a good happy place at the moment.
I agree with that one. The Celtics and the 76ers.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's with no
equivocations. That's Celtics in four.
And the Pacers and the Heat.
That's going to be a super cool and fun series. To see how much TJ Warren and Jimmy Butler get each other under each other's skin over the coming games.
Oh, they love each other.
I think that'll be super interesting. You'd think that could go seven games.
I kind of think it'll be the Heat and six personally, but
Heat and six I think would be the punter's choice. So I think that could be a fairly competitive sort of series.
The Western Conference side, you got the Lakers up against the scary Trailblazers.
You're welcome.
Oh yeah, I'm really happy about that. I mean, a lot of people look. They've had two games. It's one series all, and a lot of people are. I wouldn't say sleeping on the Lakers, but they're riding on the hype train of the Trailblazers. I still think the Lakers will finish that.
The Lakers will win this series, but it could be six or seven games.
I think so.
It's a tough out.
Yeah, it is. And you know, once they get sort of through that game, the next one isn't overly sort of too bad. That's just a hard team to come up against.
It's either Utah or Denver. So that'll be their next opponent. You've got to think of matchup problems and stuff like that. So Denver probably matches up a little bit. LA probably matches up a little bit better with Denver than what they do with with the guard heavy dominance of the Trailblazers. So I still think they should be able to shunt through that in six or seven.
I think so.
I think yeah.
you just mentioned it. What do you think of that? The Utah Denver. It's an interesting one. Imagine if they were playing
seven games. That's got to go seven games.
That'll go seven. But just imagine
they match up. They match up with each other really well. Even though Denver doesn't have Gary Harris at the moment.
They do.
But they match up with each other really well. Like, I think Jamal Murray and Devin Booker are going to offset each other. Rudy Gobert being the defensive juggernaut that he is, and Jokic being possibly one of the best passing big men that we've seen. He can still take over a game with how he plays. It all comes down to supporting cast. Utah not having Bojan Bogdanovic is going to hurt them a little bit. Joe Ingles has played
as well at the moment.
Mike Conley's got it. He's got to step it up.
Well, he's not there at the moment. He's not there, but he'll be there. He's not far away.
He'll be there for this series. I'm talking about.
Imagine if they were that'll be I'd love to see going to the Mile High up at Denver and then back to the cold of Utah. That would have been the body clock would have been terrible.
No, exactly. And Utah, if they had a better, restart, they were looking prime for that sort of fourth, even the third position. They probably weren't going to they weren't going to catch Denver, but that 4-6 range, and even through 7 with Dallas, were only separated by one game. So all of those series could have been a lot different.
Yeah.
I think probably the two next series are going to be will be the most fun.
Clippers and Dallas, and
Clippers and Dallas is going to be amazing.
I don't want to see the Clippers win because of who they've got and all that, but I still think they will win. I mean, I think they've got too much talent there, but
I would think so. Obviously this is Porzingis's first shot through the playoffs. This is Doncic's. He's putting up historic numbers in the first couple of games of the playoffs as well, which we'll get into later on. They don't have as good a supporting cast as what the Clippers do.
No.
But, it only takes a couple of those guys to get hot. Obviously the Clippers have got Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, who are in the mix for Sixth Man of the Year. I think Pat Beverly has been hurt recently, so they don't have him for the foreseeable future. So, what sort of toll that takes on them there. I think Dallas at the start of the beginning of the restart looked a little out of sync, but they're getting better. So now's the time that you want to hit your straps.
And I say Clippers should win. It's possible that'll go to seven. It's very possible
I think that will go to seven.
That
doesn't bode well for the Clippers in the long run. They don't need seven game series.
The other fun one, well, I don't know. I mean, it's obviously the Rockets and the OKC. I think Houston will win it, and I wouldn't say convincingly, but pretty easily, because I think they've got more experience.
Yeah, I know they've got Chris Paul. Like we said, in the restart preview, two teams that would have really been helped out a lot throughout this hiatus for the 3 months is Houston and the Clippers, getting their star guys rest.
Exactly. And I just think,
and
with
you can
Houston,
see the way that James Harden's playing, like he's playing as hard nosed as what anyone is. Like he is super motivated to try and lift this team. And that's the thing, when it comes down to shooting, that's a tough thing to do.
Well, they've also, they have played a couple of games, but I think Eric Gordon is a huge key there at the moment.
Well, having him back, if they didn't have him and Westbrook, they'd be in big trouble.
They'd be in big trouble, exactly.
With Westbrook being back soon, Eric Gordon, being a fairly key cog there. Guys like Daniel House, Ben McLemore.
Covington.
Covington absolutely has to be better.
He's a great player. He could, he could be a difference maker. Technically,
he should be a difference maker. But he's been, since the restart, he's been poor at best.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, no, he has. Yeah, I'd agree. That is the first round. That is the first round of the NBA playoffs, which is currently going now. So watch every game, as many games as you can, which, you know, if you've got time, a lot of them are one after the other.
And the other thing is to, you know, with the on-demand nature of a lot of things, if you've got League Pass or whatever, you can watch them whenever you want. But, you know, with ESPN, like some of these games are starting at like 4 o'clock in the morning. So that's, that's terrific for me as a shift worker to come home and off a shift, and there's live NBA on the TV. It's fantastic.
There's also not going to get, if you don't get them live, you know, a lot of streaming services as well in Australia. You can play.
You can always record stuff, you know, and watch it later on, which I generally do anyway. So, I sort of like the watch it live mentality or don't watch it at all. But,
we've
got to do this sort of stuff. You know, you've got to watch to get a grip on what's going on, especially now that the playoffs have started.
Well, that'll do it for this NBA bubble podcast. No, you love the word. I'm just going to keep saying it. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter at Final Play Pod, and obviously on Facebook, as always, Final Play Podcast. On there, you'll obviously be able to see everywhere you'll be able to get our podcast, which is everywhere that you can possibly get it on your phone, at least. Anybody can get it on their phone. It just depends which subscription you use.
Like I said, yeah, Spotify is free for everybody. So
even
if you like that certain piece of fruit technology, you can still obviously have Spotify on your phone.
That's right, you can. That'll do it for this week. My name's Jason. I'm just going to keep saying bubble every time we talk about it, Smith.
That's terrific, bubble boy. Miles, don't want to use the B word ever again, Plum. So
bubble boy. It's a boy in a bubble. That's what we should have played. I'm going to do that for the next one. I'm going to play, instead of, you know, getting sued by Walt Disney, I'm going to play something from Seinfeld. It's Morse.
Moops.
It's Moops. Sorry, that's a card.
It's not a misprint. It's what it says here on the card. It's Moops.
He just chokes him somehow. He could have just moved away.
That's all we got to do is just move back.
Oh, I love it.
I don't know how his little extender arm gets all the way out there. I don't know how that happened.
I don't get it. All right, have a good week, everyone. See ya.
See ya.